This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks, and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Hey friends, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. I'm Ben. And I'm here with Matt.
And this
Matt
is Ben Hardman, and I'm calling. No, this isn't Ben Hardman.
That's not even how he sounds.
I know. I realized anyway. I started talking, and yeah. It doesn't sound at all like.
This is Ben Hardman, and
Ben Hardman, if you're listening, we're sorry. We're so sorry.
Oh gosh.
Anyway,
I have no idea how to impersonate him.
Yeah, he is a hard guy. He doesn't have a lot of.
Hey guys.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Is that
that's
good?
Pretty good.
All right, all right.
Hey guys,
I can't do any more than that, though.
Hey guys, yeah, it's about it. Hey guys, all right. Matt, you got any Thanksgiving plans? You got any?
We're gonna eat. We're gonna get together with my family. So my mom died this year.
Yeah,
this will be our first Thanksgiving without mom.
Oh,
and
wow.
We're getting together with my dad and his wife and my two sisters and all our kids.
Okay.
We'll do that at my sister's house.
Okay. So yeah, it'll be a.
It's great. It'll be fun.
But first holiday kind of after losing somebody is a little bit, you just never know how it's going
to
hit you.
Yeah, you know, we tend to mark time and grief with like major seminal moments where you associate those people with those moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just sure that my sisters and I will associate
getting
together on Thanksgiving with my mom.
Yeah, for sure.
First time in 43 years that she hasn't been there.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you have any unique or interesting Thanksgiving traditions?
I usually make jokes about Black Friday.
Oh yeah, that's how long has that tradition been going?
I don't know.
Give me an example. What's a joke about Black Friday?
We're gonna lose listeners if I tell you.
Okay, all right.
Maybe we'll put this on the Practitioner Podcast.
There we go.
Which is on our Patreon platform.
Hey, that's a good transition.
Yes.
Talk about that.
So many of you, we have 42 supporters on Patreon. You guys are so generous and amazing. If you benefit from this podcast, from the work we do at Gravity with our articles that we write, with the free resources we give biweekly on emails, if you feel solidarity with our vision and what we're doing, would you consider supporting us on Patreon?
Yeah.
You can support us for as little as $5 a month just to say thank you, less than what it costs you to watch Netflix. Mm-hmm. At $15 a month, you get actual benefit access to an additional podcast that we're producing. The last one we released was I shared about one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made in ministry.
Yeah. Starting a series on that.
Yeah.
I've made a huge mistake.
Yeah, but Ben Hardman shared his mistake. He's only made one.
Yep, he's only made one.
Total.
I haven't made one yet, so I'm not going to share.
I've got a list.
Oh, okay. This is part of our offline conversation later.
Anyway, I think that I've often wanted to hear from people whose voices I've valued. Mm-hmm. Like, tell me about Tell me about you on your worst day.
Yeah, yeah.
I always see you on your best day.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There's a presentation we give, yeah.
Yeah, and so tell me about your worst day, right, and tell me about how that fits into your life. And so we want to give access to that. It's a little weird to do that here, although I just did it in this intro talking about jokes I'm making to my sister on Thanksgiving, which isn't my best day,
yeah,
by the way, if you didn't know. But there is, you know, goading my loved ones into a fight on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That's one of the fruit of the spirit.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's in there. It's Galatians 7.
7, yeah. That reminds me of an anecdote. Can I tell you, this is going on really long, but there's...
Yes.
I was at a church once, mm-hmm, and this pastor was like, I told you all last week to read Joshua chapter 31, because we are going to start a series on honesty and truth-telling. So how many of you read that chapter? Let's see them. Let's see the hands.
Oh, no.
How many read that chapter? People raised their hands.
Oh, no.
And then he was like... He didn't say this, but it was essentially, boom, roasted. There is no Joshua 31. Like, it was this juke of, like, shaming people in the moment for not being honest and truth-telling because he duped them into lying.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't see the irony.
Yes.
Nor do I see the irony talking about it.
Fascinating, yes.
Anyway, the Patreon platform.
Yes.
There's just things we can't... Mm-hmm. It's inappropriate to share publicly, but the Patreon platform gives us a podcast, kind of like a living room,
mm-hmm,
you know, and we can just speak plainly.
Yeah. Yes, we can. Yeah. So if that interests you, or if you just want to support, we've got some people on there that I don't think listen to any of the podcasts,
nope,
but they're like, I've got extra money in my budget and I want to support the work you guys are doing.
Yep.
Feel free. That's patreon.com/gravityleadership.
Yeah.
The other thing before we get to AJ Sherrill, we got an interview today with AJ Sherrill who's going to talk.
There is an actual interview today.
Yeah, there is. And we're going to talk with him about the Enneagram and about his, he does a lot of work with the Enneagram. He wrote about it and he does a lot of work with spiritual practices in the Enneagram. The reason we're doing this as a series is that we also work with the Enneagram, and so just want to commend our Enneagram workshops to you. Gravityleadership.com/Enneagram if you're interested in those. But Matt's raising his hand.
I have a question.
Yes, Matt.
Are they any good?
They're great. They are really good.
Okay.
They're really good. They're a lot of fun. You actually end up designing a transformation experiment over the course of about 5 hours.
Yeah.
In this workshop, and they're tons of fun. It's one of the I come away from them just realizing it's one of the most fun things that I do right now in my work. And so they're.
Yeah.
It's really fun to see light bulbs come on for people and to kind of send them away with something practical to further their spiritual formation. So we've got some scheduled. We're going to be in Indianapolis in January. We're going to be in Holland, Michigan in, March. We're going to be in Kalamazoo, Michigan in April. We're all over Michigan this year. And we've got a number of other ones in the works that I probably shouldn't announce just in case it doesn't end up working out. But all over the country, just talking with people. But if you would like to bring us out, that's kind of how we end up in places, is we have somebody who's a sponsor just say, hey, I'd like to bring you out. And so if you're interested in that, do go to gravityleadership.com/Enneagram, fill out the form, and that's goes right to my email address. I'll get in touch with you and we can talk about it.
Yeah. And the Patreon, if you want to register or see that, it's patreon.com/gravityleadership.
Yep.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
Yes, patreon.com.
C-O-M.
Yeah.
All right. Should we just get into it?
Yeah, I think that's all we need to announce. Here's our interview with AJ Sherrill.
He was delightful.
Welcome, folks, to another episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. It's nice to be with you. We're in the middle of this series on the Enneagram, and today we've got our friend AJ Sherrill in from Grand Rapids. Is that where you live?
Yes, I live in Grand Rapids, Michigan,
mm-hmm,
for the last 3 years now.
Yeah, great. So we're going to have a chat today about some Enneagram stuff, but AJ, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit to our audience? What are you doing in Grand Rapids? What are you getting up to? All that kind of thing.
Yeah. So 3 years ago, I moved here to pastor a local church called Mars Hill Bible Church. And before then, I was doing a parish model church thing in New York City. mm-hmm. with a little group called Trinity Grace. Mm-hmm. And about 3 years ago, we just felt a nudge in our hearts to move somewhere that might accommodate the life of a child better than Manhattan, which you can do it. But we had birthed a little baby girl and just had a sort of different view for what we wanted for her life. And mm-hmm. here we are. And it's been a really great ride so far.
Awesome. Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
So obviously moving from Manhattan to Grand Rapids, you understand, you know, cognitively, there's going to be a big shift. It's going to be a lot different.
Like culturally.
Right? Yeah, culturally and just sociologically. What has surprised you about life or ministry that you did not anticipate?
The biggest surprise that I felt very quickly was, in a sense, now, it's hard to speak. You have to use generalities, but and so they break down. But if I had to speak generally, Manhattan has been one of the easiest places I've ever had to preach, simply because the idols and the gospel are so much more homogeneous. There's just more homogeneity in the city than there are in a regional church. People are sort of coming up against the same sort of idols and the same allures, the same things that are poking at our souls in the city. And so there's some of that that feels, if you can sort of figure out how to minister and inhabit good news in a city, it can feel a little simpler.
Interesting.
That's at least been my personal experience.
That's so
in
fascinating.
The suburbs, yeah, in the regional church feels a little bit more complicated in terms of what people are sort of into.
Yeah. And so this may completely be unhelpful because we're, you know, you're speaking in generalities, but you have New York City, which is one of the most diverse economically, ethnically, religiously places in the world. And you have Grand Rapids, which is stereotypically kind of like, you know, white. It's Western Michigan, so everybody it comes out of the womb being a Reformed Christian. And like and so but you're saying like it's simpler. The idols are more there's more homogeneity among the idols and a really diverse population. And there's much more complexity in a much less diverse population.
Somewhat. I think I would couch that by saying I was in a particular part of Manhattan where it was multicultural, but I'm sorry, it was multi-ethnic, but monocultural. Simply because of economics and because of what it required for a sort of background in education and experience.
Got it.
It creates sort of a monocultural feel, right? Everyone's in the same coffee shop, the same sushi joint, the same vegan restaurant. Some of that just is the nature of what's happening in cities with the, how just they're catering to a certain economics and background.
Right. Man, that'd be an interesting podcast.
Not this one, though.
But not this one. We're going to talk about something else.
Yeah,
but
the Enneagram.
Yeah, yeah. So
why are we talking to AJ about the Enneagram?
Well, AJ, why are we talking to you about the Enneagram? Can you give our listeners a little bit of your story with the Enneagram?
Yeah, so about, 6 years ago, I ended up spending a week with Father Richard Rohr out in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It was part of a doctorate program that I was working on. And probably in the middle of the class, it was a week-long thing with just a couple of us. My friend Mark Skindret and I were there and he just started going off on this thing called the Enneagram and like, what are you talking? Pentagram? What are we getting in? Right. What?
What's happening here?
And, so we veered him off course for about half a day. And then I came home and just started reading a lot about it. And what happened to me is it became an access point into naming what someone called the shadow side or things that are deep in our subconscious, or even let's just like historic sin. It became for me a theory that talked about my brokenness and fragility and the ways I show up in the world that are unhelpful.
Yeah.
Most behavioral theories are pretty celebratory about the human experience. And this motivational theory really gave me access to talk about things that I'd prefer just leave alone or never name. And so what came out for me quickly was like, oh my goodness, this is like a really great access point to name things that are broken and to then use it as a tool for discipleship, not as an end to know your number, but as a means to move beyond that into what health could look like.
Yeah, that's really good. So a couple of things I noticed you say, I'd love for you to unpack a little bit. You said there's behavioral theories, but you called this a motivational theory. Can you say more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, so imagine the glacier, right? That sort of cliche example that image that we see. Yeah. Most behavioral theories test on what's above the surface of the water.
Yeah.
And motives theories are things that are underneath that you won't know. For example, two people can manifest behaviors the same way, but be driven by completely different motives. And so the Enneagram is a thing that gets underneath the thing that gets underneath a thing.
Yeah.
And those are the things that we often leave unnamed. And so that's why it's not easy to test for the Enneagram, because it's a motives theory.
Yeah.
And so like one of the things Father Rohr said to me is that you typically figure out your type, your number, based on the one that brings you the most amount of humiliation.
Yep.
So it's like, hey, have fun with that. Isn't that a fun theory? Let's all get excited.
Yeah, you have to be in a certain place sort of spiritually and in terms of self-awareness to even want what the Enneagram has to offer, right? It's not like, I feel like Myers-Briggs is a little bit like, that can be like a fun parlor trick where you're like, this is cool. Look at how I am, you know, look at my preferences, you know, look at what I'm doing here. But you're saying like for this, because this is a motivational theory, there has to be some level, right, of self-awareness about like why I'm doing what I'm doing. I have to know a little bit about my own soul before this is going to be helpful for me.
Yeah, David Brooks uses a phrase in his book, Road to Character, that's just always haunted me. He uses the phrase honest self-confrontation.
Mm.
And that's always been an invitation for me to think about confronting that which I'd prefer stay and remain unnamed.
Yeah.
And so I'm really big on Myers-Briggs, actually. I feel like a lot of people are sort of pitting theories against each other. I think we need them all.
Sure.
I think the Enneagram has just helped me in the church with like naming discipleship, like where do we go from here? Mm-hmm. And also it's been helpful in the public square because it's so stinking popular right now for really good is. And for all sorts of reasons.
Yeah.
But after a couple of years after that, I studied with Suzanne Stabile,
okay.
Who wrote The Road Back to You with Ian Cron.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember coming up to her after her first session and I just said, hey, listen, I'm about to start my dissertation. Has anyone done, like spiritual practice work on this?
Hmm.
And she said, not to my knowledge. Riso and Hudson had done some work on the spirituality of the Enneagram, which is the wisdom of the Enneagram, which is a wonderful book.
It is.
But
it is.
Other than that, at the time, I couldn't find anything.
Hmm.
Adele Calhoun and her husband and their friends just wrote one called Enneagram and Spiritual Rhythms, which is wonderful.
Oh, yeah. I have
but
that one.
Nothing at the time was available. And so that's what my dissertation work became centered on.
Hmm. That's awesome, man. I think the other thing I heard you say that I think has been really helpful already for me in this interview is I think one of the things like the Enneagram's almost popular enough now that like it's getting ragged on a little bit, right? Where people are like, is this like Christian astrology? Like what's going on here? And I love the way you talked about it, that it's not an end point in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
In that like it's not new content for us to learn, that's like, oh, here's a cool new thing. Who knows where it came from, but it's this new thing. And when you learn it, like you'll be awesomer. But you talked about it as a portal. You talked about it as like a I don't think you said this, but I was thinking about lens.
Like an access point.
An access point. That's what you said. Right. An access point into something else, into something maybe that you knew was already there.
Or didn't,
right? But it's not new content. It's basically a new access point into some of these things that we already want to be about as Christians, yeah?
Yeah, so there's four agreements that... So I do workshops all over the world on it right now. It's amazing to see how many people are interested in this.
Mm.
And I particularly love doing it for the church.
Yeah.
I feel like that's one of my unique sort of features of this is I'm more pastorally driven around the Enneagram than like anything else. And so like, for example, one of the things that I always caution people against is like, number one, never become that Enneagram church. It's just a theory.
Yeah.
Like when you begin to use it as the insider language by which we now self-understand who we are as the ecclesia, I think you can get yourself in like really big sort of insider-outsider exclusivist language. And the second thing that I'm always trying to tell people is never reduce yourself to your type. In other words, that your number, your personality is a strategy. It's not an identity. So a lot of people walk around like, oh, I'm such a seven. Yeah, in some sense. But you're a beloved child of God first and foremost. Yeah. And I think it's easy to forget that, that all this is a tool to understand your strategies to cope and thrive.
Yeah.
We so talk, your personality is not your identity.
Yeah, exactly. Really we talk about it as your hustle. Like everybody's hustling for the thing that they already have in Jesus. And knowing, if you know your strategy, I mean, you're the one who's most delusional about your strategy, usually.
Right.
And everybody else is actually really dialed in to your That's hustle more more than you. So if you can become acquainted with it, you know, I think, Robert Downey Jr. calls it hugging your cactus, you know, but Teresa of Avila calls it sitting in your weeds. And what they mean is just becoming so familiar with your BS.
Mm-hmm.
That you not you don't reject it, you don't get to work and try and clean it up. You just embrace it, accept it. But what you're saying is really important, not to over-identify with it to the point it becomes this badge or this emblem of who I am.
Right.
But you become familiar with it so that you can see through it.
Yes.
So that you're not in bondage to it. Yeah?
Yeah, but I would also add that you just did something unique in human history. No one has ever said Robert Downey Jr. and Teresa of Avila in the same sentence.
All right, end of it. End of it. Let's wrap this up. That's been another Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Amen. Pass the offering plates.
You know, just the spiritual giants of our age.
I totally agree with what you were saying after the... Yeah, I totally agree with that. Another thing that I think is interesting and helpful is that we always resist typing others. That's their journey to make.
Yeah, good.
That's really good. Suzanne Stabile once said, and I think she's so right on this, that just because you know the Enneagram doesn't mean you know the person standing right in front of you. And that's where like the motives things come in, is that you don't have access to their heart, to their mind, to their soul. Yeah. So you don't, like, if you're invited into that journey, wonderful, but imposing that on others is really suffocating. And the last is that this thing is a means, it's not an end. When the goal is to simply self-discover and then sit around and use it as a party trick where you all can talk about your fourness or whatever, that just feels like that's what I think is getting a lot of the flack right now.
Right.
It's less on the sort of mysticism. Like we came through that sort of lens of like, what is this? This is weird. I think it's now becoming so normal that we're utilizing it to sort of put people into corners or to use it as an end.
Yeah. It's like this postmodern hipster gnosis.
Yes.
You know, and it's almost, it can be obnoxious, especially, I mean, it took me like 4 years to figure out kind of where I was in the Enneagram. And I was actually really anti-Enneagram for a long time because I felt like, everybody's experiencing this, you know, special
self awareness and all this. And I can't. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's it really ticked me off. Yeah.
It's the Aeropress of personality
theory. Oh, I have one of those.
It's what the Allbirds of personality tests.
There's lots of examples. Yes. So I'm reminded as you're talking, AJ, I can't remember where I saw this, but I wrote it down. The three elements of spiritual practice, and this is kind of a general spiritual practice, are becoming present and aware throughout the day. So that's kind of something that we can do. Just become present to like what's happening in us and you know, like in our emotions and feelings and desires. And then the second thing is seeing your personality in action. So I think that's what you're talking about, like your strategy, like observing it, like, oh, I'm... Interesting. I feel really compelled right now to make sure this other person understands what I mean, even though maybe the conversation's done, right? And so noticing that, like, I wonder why I want so much to be understood by this other person or why I want to be seen in a certain light by them. And then the third element was not acting on your impulses. Sort of like noticing that and then not doing it. And that was like the kind of the beginning in their view, like what
who
a spiritual
said
that?
Who
practice.
Said this?
I can't remember. It was in the Any a Thought email, so it's probably Riso and Hudson.
Oh, I see. Okay,
talked
I was
about
gonna
this. So
guess it was Robert Downey Jr. I have a question though. Then too, like how did you go then to like mine out the rich Christian tradition of practices and marry them to these strategies or motivations found in the Enneagram? Tell me about how you the methodology or the journey of doing that.
Yeah, there were kind of a few things that had been. These confluential streams that had been flowing out of our church in New York, where I had been on a pretty deep dive to understand the contemplative, the charismatic, and the sacramental tradition.
Come on.
And so, sort of see these streams fusing together into one large river to the heart of God. And we were, as a church in Chelsea at the time at Trinity Grace, trying to do these things together, trying to marry these diverse ways together. And so a lot of it was all the dovetailing that began happening with how the Enneagram actually like could be a part of that journey. Yeah. And so I started doing a lot of research and surveys and things like that that you would do for a dissertation. Mm-hmm. And I created what was called upstream and downstream practices for each type. So for example, and this came through like survey and a bunch of data that we had mined. Upstream, I would say like what, or imagine you're on a lazy river. The downstream practices are ones that come really natural to each type.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So like for a three, for example, anything cataphatic or sensory or like data acquisition, same with a five. Things like that come natural for different reasons for the three and the five.
Right.
Like Bible study, BSF, spiritual reading, all that stuff, church history. But then there's what's called upstream practices, which are things that you're going to have to work at to actually grow. And so how do you, how do we affirm your downstream practices? But what happens in the life of a disciple is that we typically circle what we're good at and we sort of omit the rest, which is, I think, what Dallas Willard was kind of getting into in The Great Omission, that we all have sort of different omissions. Because for some person, social justice activism is really easy. And another person, contemplative spirituality comes super simple. And for others, a kind of hospitality or whatever your practices might be. Yep. There are downstream practices that we want to affirm in you. For a three, for example, an upstream practice is going to be accountability, like having a person to actually like sit with you to talk through all of the ways you're trying to strategize and manipulate your way to the top in ways that there are certain people that have access to your game and know, hey, listen, that's really phony.
Yeah.
And that's not like who you are really underneath and what your real desires are.
Yeah.
So I like a lot of my workshops are designed to help people create a rule of life with different practices from the great Christian tradition. So Foster's been really helpful for that. Adele Calhoun has been helpful for that. Dallas Willard, those three sources are my biggest to say, if you're looking for like a library of different ways to pursue the heart of God and others, that they are the three that I think best encapsulate a wide vision of that.
Yeah.
That's really good. It's almost like, and this gets back to the Enneagram being a access point, because in one sense, you could read Celebration of Discipline and you're like, oh, how many chapters are there? Like 20? There's like 20 disciplines in there. And you're just like, should I do one per day? Or, you know, like there's this overwhelming, like, and so the Enneagram can function almost as a curation tool to say, what do I, like, what's wisdom for me right now? What do I need in terms of upstream, downstream? I like those terms.
And I like that phrase right now because it gives you freedom to know, hey, listen, in 6 months, your formation might actually demand something different. And that's okay. Like, that's a beautiful part of the seasons of the soul. Not that we should just be creatures of contrast and going with whatever feels great all the time, but it is something to say, it is good to freshen things up and to seek contrast in times of our spiritual journey for sure.
Can you share a little bit about what that's looked like for you, AJ? Like what your Enneagram number is and how the downstream and upstream practices work their way into your life?
So I am a 3-4 wing. And my 4 wing's pretty heavy. Like my wife would say, she's pretty sure I'm a 4-3 wing. I mean, if
she was
going to
do that thing
shuffle,
where she types you, right? Yeah.
I've given her permission though.
Okay. Yeah.
She'll put shuffle on like when we're on a road trip or something, and she'll just be like, your iTunes playlist is so depressing.
Yeah, that's
funny. Like Elliott Smith all day long.
It's God's playlist right there is what that is.
That's right, man. Get in touch with your feelings. No, I'm like, either way, I'm really thick into the feeling triad. That's my center. And so for me, if I am a three, which I believe I am, I have to be really honest about not trying to manipulate the way others perceive me.
Mm-hmm.
Like even when I do these workshop thingies, on my way, I'm thinking, oh, I hope they like me. I hope they think I'm competent.
Right,
you know,
like
when I read Henri Nouwen, I connect so much with his humility around, you know, I am what I have. I am what I do. I am what others say about me. Yeah. Like that's really a struggle for me. So for me, it's finding someone, and all honestly, one of my spiritual practices is sharing my insecurities with my wife, where I literally sit on a couch and say, I feel really incompetent, or I feel I feel really sad. You know what I mean? So it's weird to say these things that I expect out of my 5-year-old to say to me.
Yeah.
Where I realize like there's this, a bit of an inner child in me that continues to need to process like rudimentary feeling where it just, I want to conceal it and act like I got this.
Present competency, present.
Yes, present is a good word to say.
Yeah.
In terms of like, so like having that sort of accountability and spiritual partnership with someone, with my wife and then with a male in my life that I can say, hey, listen, I feel really small here, or I feel like I'm becoming really prideful here. I'm just sensing a lot of this stuff. So for me, the other side that I need is contemplative prayer. So a lot of my previous work and writings were around what it means to sit with God and to be. So we spent a lot of time talking at God early on and then talking to God and then listening to God. But then there's that fourth category of being with God. And so it's in that frame when I know I'm most healthy and I'm less triggered and less reactive in life when I begin my day with centering prayer. So I've included that into my sort of morning ritual of quiet time and spiritual reading and prayer. And I'm not healthy when I have gone several days without actually just not trying to produce as the first part of my day, not reaching for my phone, not wondering about my emails, my calendar, what I want to tweet based on my quiet time I just had, which is so phony and hilarious. Anyway, so that would be the biggest thing is contemplative spirituality is my upstream all the time.
Yeah. And the accountability, is that, would you consider that downstream or upstream for you?
That's upstream for me.
Okay.
Because it's, I don't want to, I'd prefer omit that. To be honest about that's really hard.
Yeah.
But to be aware of that, first of all, requires the centering prayer for me where I get access into sort of my inner life.
Yeah.
So the downstream for me would be things like Bible study. Mm-hmm. I read, like I drink water. So it's just like, I love to read books. So that comes really natural for me, but for very different reasons than it would my wife, who's a 5. For me, it's because I want to impress you. Like I want to stand up on a stage on Sunday and be like, check that out. I bet you never heard that before. You know?
Yeah.
Bet you never heard Robert Downey Jr. And
he's already said he hasn't. Teresa Lovella. I'm putting a little pin in that in my
head. So your three wing might be
my three wings is kind of
going downstream right now.
So. Ego tinglies is what I'm saying. Yeah. So AJ, it's interesting that you mentioned this. Our listeners can't see, but I'm wearing my collar today, and I've been an Anglican priest for 4 years,
something like that.
4 years. I've worn my collar maybe 4 times.
And that's always at like other people's ordinations.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm wearing my collar today, doing an upstream discipline. That I discerned in our community through our discipleship practices. And the reason being is I realized that I like to manage the story other people tell about me. And when I wear a collar, I can't do it. And, you know, if I wear a black shirt, like you're wearing a nice fashionable black shirt, there aren't many triggers for black shirts for people. You know, there's no, they may say, oh gosh, that's a Tommy.
I don't like that brand.
I don't like that brand.
Maybe that guy's.
But but for me, the collar, it's like I put a collar on it and I release into the world stories that I can't control or argue with or manage. And it freaks me out. It freaks me out, you know? And I've got all these defenses, all these other stories I tell myself about why that's pastorally irresponsible and insensitive.
Right. It's not missional. You shouldn't do it or what. Yeah.
Right. But honestly, it came down to this me consenting to release control over what people have to say about me and think about me. And it's definitely an upstream practice for me today.
Yeah.
But it relates to what you just said. So I feel
Did you read the Atlantic cover this week?
Oh gosh, do I need to?
I have it saved. I haven't read it yet.
What is it?
Should we abolish the priesthood?
It was a call to basically rid ourselves of clerical priesthood in the Catholic Church.
Yep.
That is the problem,
right?
Is cleric.
Right. Yeah.
And so to wear that collar, I'm sure most people don't make even that differentiation between an Anglican and a Catholic. I mean,
no, they wouldn't know the difference.
I see them as brothers and sisters of ours.
Yeah.
But most people would probably just, especially if they read that article.
Right. You know, they'd be like, oh, there's one of those.
Manage that conversation in them.
I know what you're all about.
But I say this is an Anglican priest who's got kind of a neo-Anabaptist kind of middle finger to the Christendom streak in him. Mm-hmm. Like, I get why he's saying that. Like, as an Anglican priest, I can affirm, I mean, I know his thesis, but I could restate it back to him in an article I would write.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, like, the acrimony and animus that he has towards the clergy, like, I don't want to be a part of that,
mm-hmm.
right?
I'm not one of those priests.
I don't want to be one of those priests, yeah. right? So even, I mean, that's the headline of the world I feel like I'm going out into when I wear a collar.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, super interesting.
Yeah. What about for you, Ben? What would be upstream practices for you as an Enneagram 1, right?
I'm an Enneagram 1. I was thinking about this, like
maybe we can ask our expert AJ.
Maybe he could help me. Maybe let's do a little bit of that. Let me tell you a couple things, AJ, and then you can give me some coaching. Maybe I don't want to put you on the spot, but So I'm Enneagram 1. I like depressing music too, so I don't know what that says about me. But I do like the deep kind of depressing music. I'm always listening to The National at my house, and nobody else in my house really likes it. They're like, I can't understand what he's saying. His voice is too low.
You have to have like a 16 ounce of Chardonnay buzz to really get The National.
Yeah,
you know?
That's pretty much, I think, how he gets that. So, for me, as an Enneagram 1, which is, you know, the Rohr talks about the need to be perfect. I don't resonate with perfection as much as I resonate with reformation. My compulsion is to make things better, to improve, and that oftentimes comes out as criticism and judgment. So for me, I think downstream practices are
truth telling,
right? Perfecting things, making things better. Some downstream practice. I also love reading. I've always been a very voracious reader, and I realized like the reason I'm reading is to gather like all the things I need to kind of be an improver of the world, you know, that kind of thing. But a couple things, like it feels like in your language, AJ, an upstream practice for me is going to bed on time, like getting enough sleep. I feel like I don't like sleeping because I'm not producing anything. So there's a production thing in me as well. So getting enough sleep is one of those. I also need to start my day in kind of contemplation. That kind of thing. One of the things I notice about my prayer life is that the easy stuff, I wanted to ask you about this as well, but the easy stuff for me is anything where there's scripted prayer, and I go through like morning prayer and I'm doing the prayers, right? So I'm reading these prayers. But the hard stuff for me is when I get to this part of my morning prayer time where it's time for contemplation, and that's like when I don't do anything. And that's when I feel a little itchy. You know, a little agitated, like, especially if I got going a little late and there's lots to do today and that kind of thing. And so so it feels like the contemplation part is upstream. Going to bed on time is upstream. Those are a couple things.
Here's one more.
Mm-hmm.
You've borne witness to serving your wife with concrete acts of service as
yes.
an upstream
yes.
discipline.
Yeah.
Right. So making her breakfast.
Right. Making her breakfast. And there's a longer story behind that. But that's an upstream practice for me to take time to connect with the people in my life just for connection's sake. You know,
yeah.
We're not like doing something awesome together or, you know, that kind of thing.
So what's he missing? What upstream practices can Ben integrate into
his life? You're trying to get me. Get me better.
Something riding on this. We're ministry partners, so
I would say it sounds like you have a production orientation toward life.
Yeah,
probably kind of a future orientation of what things could be,
mm-hmm.
and how the present sort of collapses into that.
That's true.
One of my closest friends is a very gifted neuropsychologist. He said that, like, getting back to your productivity and your sleep, he would say that you need at least 8.2 hours a night for optimal brain coherence.
Mm.
So, like, the best thing you could do for your productivity is to not sort of crush it late into the evening, but to go to bed, because
that's enough time.
2 hours of coherence is better than 6 hours of, like, just trying to get through.
Yes.
Even things like how your brain shrinks to drain toxins when you sleep.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It is.
Things happening with white matter and gray matter and all that stuff.
Yeah. I recently listened to a podcast about that, and it is kind of blowing my mind. But it's interesting, though. It's almost like it gets you out of the space. I used to do my spiritual practices as like a one. So I was going to fix my brokenness, right? By like doing this stuff to myself.
Does to make yourself
sense?
Better.
Yeah, to make myself better or to impress God, you know, that kind of a thing. And so I like what you're saying, though, because it's almost like there's an affirmation of my, like, me wanting to produce is not like evil, right? That's part of my calling as a human, producing, you know, good things. But in order to produce like in the way that I've been designed to produce, mm-hmm. I also need to not produce. I have to submit to the way I've been created, needing 8.2 hours of sleep.
Yeah, I'll read you a couple things from Enneagram in the Way of Jesus,
okay.
Which was what my research was from. Before I do that, did you ever read the book Daily Rituals? I think is what it's called.
Who wrote it?
I don't remember. I read it a while back. Okay. Essentially, it takes like artists and poets and thinkers, and it talks about like it'll take Freud or it'll take you know, a bunch of literary writers that you'd have heard of, or even famous painters. And we have this understanding that they probably never slept. They were up as like the mad scientist at 3
right,
a.m.
Right.
And it was amazing to me. One of the most common things that they shared was that they actually rested pretty well and that they got up and did most of their like work early, and that by noon they were taking walks with their family.
Wow.
Like through the park.
Yeah.
And it was not for everybody,
right.
But it sort of dismantled that stereotype that we have of like these people that are geniuses that they're up at 3 a.m.
working, you know, 80
drinking
hours a week,
wine and totally
drunk. Yeah.
And that there's just such a, they actually like committed themselves knowing that they could probably produce about 2 to 3 hours a day at optimal level. Hmm. And then making sure that they had like all this downtime where the free thought and creativity actually begins to flow once again, and you recharge and then are ready for the next day. But so from for the type one, for example, what I recommend, so if your vice is anger, your virtue is serenity, mm-hmm. I recommend nature walks. And here's why for the one, because what it does is it recenters you into a place where it can remove judgment and critique over yourself, and it rebaptizes you into a universe that is quite intricate. And to do that in a way where you're not, not everything becomes self-referential. For example, it's not like when you're hiking, you don't need to look at a tree and say, I don't like that branch, or I don't like that flower, or I really like that bush. It's enough that that is what it is.
Yeah.
And that you're a part of creation with it, and you can just be there. You don't have to fix anything.
Yeah. Dude, that's fascinating. Like, I've never thought about that. Like, there's nothing, like, critiquing nature would just be dumb, right? Like, nobody does that.
But if anybody can figure out how to do it.
Unless it's Kutso.
right. Where is this? Why did this? Yeah, or mosquitoes. Yeah. No, that's really good.
You know what I'm noticing? Just real quick.
That? Yeah.
You have also testified recently to feeling God's invitation and your response to taking your dog for a walk.
Yes.
Without your headphones in.
Yep.
With no headphones, no podcasts, and no like work being done, just enjoying you and your dog and your neighborhood.
Yes.
This is deep crying out to deep to get your butt.
I'm doing it, man.
Get your butt upstream, man.
No, I'm doing it.
All right.
Every time my wife asks me after dinner if you want to go for a walk with the dog, my discipline is yes, I do, and my phone stays at home. So it's and it has been really helpful for me, really renewing.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Downstream, I would say that's helpful. I find with ones is, and this is probably old hat to you, but it's just the simple task of journaling. But the why underneath that is not because, hey, your thoughts are great, although I'm sure they are. Knowing you, you're really thoughtful.
Right.
But what's underneath that is that you can differentiate yourself from things that aren't working so that it doesn't get jumbled up in your subconscious as like just sort of like big mass of life not working, right? Oh, you can get it out.
That's so true.
So it's a differentiation. And at the same time, I always tell ones like, it's such a heavy burden that ones carry for the world. It's beautiful, but it's heavy. And so journal about things working in your life as well, not just what's not working. Fours and ones have a tendency to just like write on stuff that's broken and messed up and like fixing.
So true.
And like you need both sides of that.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, that's so helpful. I do journal pretty regularly, and it's just helpful for you to name that there's a differentiation that's happening when I'm journaling, is I'm able to see my thoughts and go, okay, well, there they are. And that doesn't seem true, you know, like, and that's not me. And I can, totally. I can be sad about this, or I can be frustrated about this and then just move on with my day. Like that's super interesting.
Yeah.
AJ, we're about at time here, but I'd love to have you back maybe to do this kind of thing. Would you do this kind of thing with each number? Like, I'm sure this has been really helpful for all the fours and the
ones.
Is
this what his book is about?
But is this what your book is about? Maybe people should just get your book.
Yeah, the first half is on typology. The second half is on helping people create a rule of life. And I do it.
Awesome.
Like, I love to receive invitations to do it with people in churches all over the world.
Yeah. Because
that's like where I get most joy is seeing people come alive and ask questions.
Yeah, totally.
Create for themselves. Like, what I want people to know is they have agency and responsibility to create a kind of life that they long to flourish within.
That's not like
my critique of the church is that we've batched formation to say, read your Bible, come to church, pray, give some money, and in 30 years you'll be different. Most people don't feel different. They just feel older, you know, as if there's like one way that I can pray or one way to read scripture or
there's
so many ways to do these things that have to do with our personalities.
Right. They have to, and our desires and the way we inhabit those disciplines. Cause there is a way of reading your Bible that does not transform you at all. Right?
Sure.
There's a way of doing these things. And so you have to inhabit it in a certain posture.
Yeah. I also, what I really want to make explicit what you're saying, AJ, is there's this tendency to hear the Enneagram as a way that you sort of justify and rationalize who you are. And then if we're going to break the practices out into the Enneagram numbers, then you just you take Christian spirituality as a buffet and you make this bespoke pastiche sort of spirituality that's extremely niche. And, you know, it's like the ultimate specialization of Christianity for your number. I don't hear you saying that.
No.
And this is the strength of the Enneagram, is that what the number gives you permission and freedom and opportunity, you said agency, to enter into the depths of your work so that you're not caged by that.
Right.
So that you're not always just reacting out of your own number and like trying to get all these little needs met, or just throwing sort of the Awana best practices at your life and hoping they stick.
Yeah.
So that's why I think this metaphor of upstream and downstream is really helpful, because we're always seeking to grow deeper, more mature in our, you know, in how God's created us, but not be in bondage to how God's created us. I mean, our created sort of preferences.
Yeah.
And remember, you have every type in you somewhere.
Yes.
That you're not just a core, and you also have stress and security areas that you go. Yep. And you also have wings. So there's a lot of options. And we're also creatures of seasons, where what I like to tell people when we go into the rule of life part is that, hey, some of you have heard stuff that doesn't apply to what your type is, that the Spirit has just been saying, hey, pay attention to that. Cling to that. Run with it. Do not feel in any way like pigeonholed. Well, I'm not a one, so I can't do a journal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just silly.
Yeah.
It is. Well, this is great, AJ.
So super helpful.
Title of your book again?
It's called Enneagram in the Way of Jesus.
And we will put a link to that in our show notes.
Yep.
If someone is listening to this, I'm listening to this, and is excited about what you're talking about, I am also excited about...
can identify, in other words.
I'm not like a co-host, I'm a listener. AJ, how can they connect with you? Social media, or where do they go to find you?
Yeah, if you're interested in a workshop coming near you, info@marshill.org. And then my name, AJ Sherrill, is my Twitter. And then AJ_Sherrill is my Instagram.
Yeah, okay.
Two R's, two L's.
We'll put that in the show notes as well. This has been fantastic, AJ. Yeah. Thanks so much for the service to the church this is. And God bless your pastoring in Mars Hill and translocally as you lead these workshops.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Grace and peace.
Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you enjoy learning from this podcast, please be sure to show your support by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. Be sure to share with your friends on social media too. And we would love to hear from you, so please email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. You can join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.